Welcome to Sneaker Dads. I'm John Ratner. This is episode number 99, and we're taking it back to Montreal to talk to Michael DSK, aka Sneakers High, the creative behind Slang Here and much more. We have a lot to talk about, so let's get into it. Mike, welcome.
Hey guys, thanks very much for having me. What a pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure to have you too. Got a lot to talk about, but as always, I have to hit you with the first and not the most important question, but the thing everyone always likes to know, kind of good way to get to know what kind of sneaker person you are. What's in the rotation these days? What are you wearing on feet?
Man, I'm looking down right now. I'll just hit you with this quick one. The North Face Steep Tech Slide for this morning. It's kind of like my house and kicking around.
Cozy stuff.
Kind of slide. Stuff. I'm not a big sandal guy, but it's got that Steep Tech spell out. That's all me, you know?
And if you're going out?
If I'm going out, they kind of just generally in the rotation, it's a little bit of a mix of my kind of usual suspects. Some recent releases, all of which I like a lot, but kind of went under the radar, as well as a combination of, let's just say, a few other sneakers that have come out over the last few years. Like, example, I'm rocking yesterday I broke out for the first time the Moab, the purple Moab that came out, I think it was like last year or like last summer. Mm-hmm. Just a good general release. They retroed, you know, I think, I don't know if that was like an original colorway or not, but definitely a really good one as far as I was concerned. So I've been rocking that. I was rocking like for the summertime, a really good joint, Safari 87. It's not really like, if I understand correctly, like an actual Atmos release, but it like has that Atmos like colorway, I think. Mm-hmm. Safari joined the 87 with the like the brown and the green and the kind of oranges. So that's like a really good summer shoe. Neck breaker for sure. I was rocking a few Air Force Ones last week. We'll talk a little bit more about that, I guess, a bit later. I've been working with these guys doing this Air Force One joint that we launched last week. But I've been wearing a lot of kind of a shoe that I go to a lot if it's like raining or kind of just goes with everything is like the I don't know if it's the Air Terra Humara or the Terra Humara, but the Supreme, the all black on black. That one too was like pretty easy to find a few years ago. That was already a few years ago though. It's like a good, easy, like all black shoe. Got these Adidas Iraq joints, the Gore-Tex ones. I wear a lot too in the rain or just like go to the store, run around quickly, whatever it is I'm doing. Like most of us, I'm sure I could go on and on. I'm looking at these Reebok. I don't know if it's, I think it's called the Aztrek. The Az, yeah. Not the Aztec, but the Aztrek, I think.
I think so.
It's a Japan joint. Have a good time, if I'm not mistaken. Just like a really easy, like inexpensive shoe that just looks really good.
Nice.
So that's kind of what I got in front of my door.
Yeah, that's not bad in front of the door. Yeah. In the rotation, you talked about some newer releases. Are you the type of guy who likes to wear things that come out and mix in older pairs too? Like kind of do both?
For sure. If I like it, for the most part, I got it, which works well in that a lot of my interests lie in what's not like popular for most people at the moment or otherwise. But there's definitely like a bunch of the old mixed with the new, the vintage thing, if you like, we can get into as much as you want as well, which is definitely part of the rotation for sure. Holds a special place as far as like my interests are concerned, but you know, like the kind of classic, just like kind of proceed with caution with like all those old pairs. So there are a few that it's strangely enough would be considered vintage in a sense from like, let's say like the early 2000s. A lot of the like early like 2000, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, they're like already not necessarily considered vintage, but are starting to look and starting to crumble like they were vintage, you know?
Absolutely.
So, you know, I have a pair behind me, the Air Max 93, the Burst, the Navigation Pack. Like I have a couple of pairs that look great that are just like, just can't wear them for the moment. Like to get a little bit more use out of those. And, you know, the list goes on and on really. But yeah, a bit of the old and the new, it's not for me, you know? And there's a few things that will drop like here and there. Nike.com online or in stores. I'm not, you know, I don't really buy too much on impulse for a few reasons, but you know, some brand new stuff that drops, you know, if I like it, you know, I'll get it. But as far as like trying to avoid using the word hype at all costs, because I don't know if that defines quite, you know, what I'm saying, but I guess for the most part, new clean sneakers. There's something about brand new sneakers that, I mean, doesn't get a whole lot better than that, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, when we talk about people who put away shoes when they come out, I think, you know, maybe older heads would do that maybe for a hype shoe or like a, you know, a retro Jordan that everyone's rocking. But if you're buying things that aren't that hype and not everyone's talking about, it's a lot easier to just bust them out right away, because you don't have to worry about the next guy walking down the street, or if you're at a sneaker shop, like looking like someone else, because, you know, there's not that huge interest in it anyway. I'm kind of the same in that respect. You talked about vintage. I do want to get into it a little bit if you want to, because you talked about older pairs that, you know, are, I guess, the new era of vintage, because they're just becoming that old. And but do you go back further? Do you have pairs, or do you look for pairs that are actually, you know, from the 80s and 90s, or you can, or even 70s, or do you stay more modern than that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Long story short, definitely have a lot of vintage footwear, clothing, as well as the real, what I describe as like my kind of like holy grail, so to speak, or like that real Indiana Jones type shit, you know?
Yeah.
That is not necessarily the footwear or the clothing, but something that I have had discovered and unearthed as far as all of the like point of purchase displays, all the like marketing kind of material, which is for sure considered vintage now, everything from the 70s, 80s and onwards. But really, as far as the footwear is concerned, I'm always constantly looking for like all types of just like really cool footwear, clothing, etc. If time and the budget permits. So over so many years, you know, I was kind of like, as they say, digging, you know. So everywhere I went, you know, I kept my ears and my eyes open, came across tons. I mean, literally, I mean, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of pairs of new as well as the old. I've worn a bunch of it, a bunch of the old like sneakers and clothing, a lot of it just because of like the condition or the state that I found them in, or that they kind of like incurred, didn't permit necessarily for wearing, like for wear. Also coupled with the fact that I was just scooping up like any size, you know?
Okay.
So I sold a bunch of it. I kept a bunch of it. Recently in the last few years, like I would say only probably like 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years, you know, for my own personal kind of reasons, I became more comfortable with like letting go, like giving away as gifts or even just like to friends, or selling a lot of these like old vintage sneakers, some of which were still like dead stock, looking brand new, not crumbling, like fetching like top dollar for. So a bit of everything, you know, as far as sneakers are concerned, it's like, you know, I'm definitely not the only guy out there like this, but I'm one of those guys, you know. It's like all sneakers, everything, for better or for worse, you know, and it's 25 plus years now, you know, maybe more.
Sounds a lot like your friend Nick, who I've had on the podcast and who recommended I have you on. It sounds like
I have nothing but great things to say about him, considering sneakers and otherwise, you know.
Cool. Yeah. You know, you talked about, you know, your sort of broad range of sort of interests, and you mentioned that piece about displays and things. I'd love to hear more about that, because I have, you know, small things, vintage, and I find them very, very cool to have around. You know, some people even display on them. Do you use them for, we'll talk more about your creative pursuits, but do you use them as sort of mementos, kind of archive kind of pieces that are important to like the culture? Do you display them, or do you use them in your art?
One of my favorite topics, man. I don't want to upset anybody. this is it. So what I describe as like displays, commonly referred to in the industry as like point of purchase displays, or materials that were designed and manufactured and used essentially in like retail stores to promote and market the products, right? So, you know, every brand did that. Every brand still does that. It's not quite the same. Subconsciously, I've got all my life, like most of us, in every sense, by like, you know, just being in and out of stores and kicking around, you know, all of our lives since we were kids. It's like people who work in advertising more or less know you better than you even know yourself, right? It's like you don't even know it, but it's like they got you, right? Like we pretend like we're immune and it doesn't work, but it works, you know? So growing up, even over so many years, being interested in collecting sneakers and clothing, you know, attaching, for better or for worse, my identity to like all these material goods, which is ridiculous. You know, I'm like at an age now where I realize that it's a little bit ridiculous, a lot ridiculous, you know. But my introduction and like discovery, what I find equally, if not even more fascinating than like collecting the shoes and the sneakers, is as of, I say recently, we're talking maybe like kind of like 10-ish years now, I was still collecting sneakers. Things had changed a lot for me in that context, in that I was getting a little bit older. Like I said, I was attaching my identity less to these like material goods. So I still more or less, you know, for the most part, like felt the same way and was just as much interested in sneakers, especially, and like the clothing as I always was. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, for whatever reason, it could be just, I don't know, just personally, you know, I felt like the sneaker, I don't want to say the sneaker game, but like the state of like where my interests were as far as sneakers were concerned about 10 years ago, like there just wasn't a whole lot going on. But I do remember discovering one particular store that it was like that classic like mom and pop shop, you know. So there were a few. I was still like quote unquote like shopping around for sneakers, etc., just like I had always been doing. And I was digging like for sneakers especially. So when I discovered this shop, which was in Montreal, it's now since closed, right away I noticed it was like this like old joint, you know. It's like the people there were older people, they were super nice, they were like really good at what they did. So that being said, they were like still pushing to make sales. But like everything, like not everything, but for the most part, like this place was like, there was just a bunch of old, like dusty stuff there, you know? So like right away, anybody like us, like you know, you hit something, you know? And it's like that classic, like, how am I going to see more? Like, how am I going to come back? Like, how am I going to further this kind of relationship? But right off the bat, I can't remember exactly what I said or what I saw. I may have bought like a few things there. I'm really not even sure what it was I picked up that first visit or two. But because it was an old store, it was like an old sporting goods store, you know? And they were still doing a lot of business as far as like, you know, the footwear, the clothing, a lot of like sports, like, you know, like soccer cleats. So when I started to talk to this older man, and from what I understand was, or from what I believe was his wife, like one of the first things I asked them was like, what do you have in the basement? Like, are there any old Michael Jordan sneakers, whatever. The first thing he told me, he was like, oh, you're a couple years too late. He didn't say like 10 years too late. He was like, it's been a couple years since some guys from Toronto came here and cleaned out all the footwear, like on some classic, like those stories that like seem like exaggerated. They're like mythical, like any collector, not just in sneakers. It's like, but obviously in sneakers, like we're always hearing these stories about like, you know, I found this basement full of like all these yeah. Jordans or these old sneakers. It's like, they're far and few between, but like, yo, they're out there, you know, just got to look, like keep working, just do the work and get to the bag, you know? So the guy was like, ah, these guys from Toronto, they came with some cash, $10 here, $20 here, $30, $40 here, whatever it was. They spent X amount of money and they left with all the sneakers. And he was like, you know, like the dude really knew his stuff. Like he was in the business for so long. He knew like the names of every single models. And he was like running through. And I was just like, my eyes like rolled to the back of my head, you know, my jaw dropped. And I was like, damn, you know? But the good news, it's like a blessing and a curse. So it's like on the other side of things, I asked him a few things about like, they call me ACG Mike. So they're like, yeah, you know, you're interested in the ACG. Cause I was asking like a bunch of questions. Like, I don't even know how long I was there. I was like, it seemed like I was bothering them, but I realized that like, it was a pleasure for them. Mm-hmm. And that's when we really like, started this relationship and we're friends, so to speak. Like I still go see them, you know? But anyway, so I started asking him about like, you know, some ACG stuff or whatever, Nike this, Nike that. He started to tell me, he's like, oh, we have some like posters. We have this or that. But you know, it's like that typical, like, oh, I have to look, like, I don't want to look. Maybe come back in 2 months. And you're like, 2 months?
It's I'm like, ready.
I'm thinking about this 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
So that's where I unearthed for, you know, what I believed was a very fair price for him, but for next to nothing, you know, pennies. All of these point of purchase and displays in every shape and form, every single brand you could imagine. The most, you know, I'm a designer, right? I'm a creative. We'll talk a little bit more about that whenever you like. But from a marketing design, you know, creative kind of a perspective or standpoint, not to mention the fact that I'm like an obsessive, you know, hoarder, you know, OCD, sneaker collector, you know, the list goes on. I was like, man, this is incredible for a few reasons. And all of that, besides, you know, like one or two kind of like Michael Jordan posters, I'm just like using that as an example. These guys from Toronto, like passed up or just like didn't like see or know about any of that stuff. So of course I was disappointed to like not cash out on like a huge basement full of sneakers, although I did get hundreds of sneakers from there, you know, all those classic like Jordans, like 1 to 12 or whatever, and all the Air Max, etc. It was there. It left. I didn't get them, you know, for the most part. But all this display stuff, the arrangement, not a lot of people know this because I've only discussed this with like people, you know, that I know well. And for years, as you could imagine, I kept it very secretive. Even though the location was open to the general public, and over the years, I found out that some of my friends and even, you know, people who I later met knew about that place and like, you know, had gone in or whatever. It's like, they just didn't rap the way I did. So essentially what I arranged with this couple was that over the course of well over a year, every single weekend, we discussed an amount, signed, and I would show up every weekend. But what was equally as, I don't want to say upsetting because I'm exaggerating, but was what was equally as like fun and amusing and exciting, interesting, fascinating, as well as like gave me a lot of anxiety, curiosity. I had so many questions, was the fact that every week, and this dude would just like, you know, like he said, like we agreed, would just like show up with like a new box. And like, I would never know what would be in the box. So it could be like one display here, 10 displays here. You know, one day he shows up with the box. I don't know, it's like 250 posters. And I spent all morning going through every single one. And every week, almost like 2 years actually, I would just show up and he would show out, you know? And it was like, it was insane, you know? It was just like every week it was more bizarre and exciting than the last week. And I got everything. I mean, I'm looking at a few pieces now. Like, you know I really went off.
Tell us some of the pieces. I mean, we know posters, we know displays, but I mean, that doesn't tell the story. That doesn't do it justice, just to, right?
So I was collecting very secretively these displays over like, let's just say over the last like 10 years. And where I started to get most of them were from that store. I do still keep a very select few, just as like decorations, like in my place. A bunch of it is just in storage. In 2015, I would love to talk more about that in a minute. I curated and built this massive, massive project based around directly related and based around all of these point of purchase displays. That was in, I believe, 2015. Strangely enough, right across the street from that original store where I got a lot of that stuff, the couple even came. It was very strange for them, you know,
yeah, I'm
like
sure.
Relive. Because like all this stuff for them was like in boxes in their like, I don't know, in their basement or storage or who knows where. So like to see all of their lifetime of like, not their lifetime's work, but I mean what they used to actually, you know, outfit their stores with.
Yeah.
To come out of these boxes and displayed in like a gallery or even museum context, like 30 whatever plus years later for them was like mind boggling. But anyways, that's a whole other thing. So I do have a few of them. Like right now I'm looking at this. I don't know exactly what year it is. It's a Michael Jordan. It's a Nike. It's written. I don't think it's from 84 or 87, but it's written. It's like it's a Michael Jordan Jam and Slam poster. I think it's like, it's definitely my favorite collection of like the Nike posters. I'm not sure if they call it something to do with like maybe like the postcard collection. It's like something maybe like described like that. The edges of the poster, anyways, different colors, etc. Those are like the posters. But really what fascinates me the most are these like I described with these three-dimensional objects. One of which is insane. A lot of it I've posted on my Instagram, like, you know, this crazy like Nike like fit system.
Yeah.
Just like three-dimensional display, you know, we'll talk about the Theos thing soon too. Like that being said, there's this like crazy, it's wicked. One of my favorite, like hardwood, mint condition. A lot of this stuff was like mint condition basketball display, which is in Theos's window right now. I did a lot of business with them over the last several years. Like they have, from what I believe, massive, massive neon light. I believe maybe from even like the early 80s, Nike, pink and blue. So light boxes, neon lights, you know. Honestly, these three-dimensional objects, as I describe them, these displays, everyone is so much more bizarre than the last. Nike at that time, I did a little bit of research. over the last several years. But, you know, like Nike was, and they still are, paying very, you know, close attention to detail in many respects, not all, but for sure many. The point of purchase stuff, as far as I'm concerned, when I look at these pieces, are like, they're just not doing them like they used to, you know? Mm-hmm. As far as the colors, the different like techniques that they used, however they did it, by hand or with machines or whatever machines, or whoever designed them, however they designed them, I'm not exactly sure where in the United States or elsewhere, I really don't know, but fascinating. I mean, mostly on the Instagram, you could see a lot of these objects are just like right off the top of my head, I'm thinking the last one I scored from that particular retailer over the last several years, like I've literally I'm not extremely well traveled, but I've literally been, you know, around the world looking for this type of stuff, United States, in Europe as well, here in Canada for sure, in the UK, which is another interesting thing, is that in all, we'll get into this New York shit, you know, later, but I was living and I'd been to New York so many times since, like, let's say the late 90s, early 2000s, and having been immersed, I mean, fully, like, 24/7 lifestyle between graffiti, which is a whole other can of worms, and sneakers, New York is like, that's the Mecca, you know? So what I'm getting at is that having been to New York so many times looking for sneakers, I never really like been digging in New York, especially for the displays. The right. Sneakers for sure, for 20 plus years, that's for sure. But the displays, besides like a couple of spots here and there, just like on the fly that I got lucky and I just asked for like a couple of things that I saw in the store, which I was lucky enough, fortunate enough to have gotten, you know. That's something that like over these last many years, I'm like, man, I gotta do like a real like solo trip to New York specifically for the displays. And like I said, even though these type of pieces may interest a lot of people, and like a lot of these mom and pop shops for the most part are just like gone for good, if you keep poking around, like you'll find what you're looking for, you know.
Yeah, but people don't ask, right? You have to ask, and you know, sometimes this stuff gets,
you gotta ask away,
right? Yeah,
for sure, you gotta ask, you know. And like, especially if you're on vacation, that relationship may not permit immediately for you to, you know, like investigate further, right? It's like, if you're never coming back to the place you went on vacation, it's like you may not grant you access to that basement like right now. Yeah. You know,
corporate's yeah, not asking for that cardboard you know, David Robinson's thing, 7 foot tall. They're not asking for it back. It's getting folded up and putting in the garbage.
Oh man, behind, David, right? Robinson, how'd you come up with that one, man?
I don't know. I'm sure you have a David Robinson.
My mind jogging, you know, that's a good one, because you know, I have this 3D, this plexiglass. It's not an Air Force One. It's like a force.
Yeah.
Like David Robinson, sure. wicked display. three dimensional. It's got these air bubbles with this like illustration or this design of like the foot on it, where like you're like, a lot of these displays are meant to like, you know, put like the shoe like on it somehow,
mm-hmm,
or whatever, like that's how it was marketed in the stores, you know. So example, this David Robinson one that I have, it's oh man, it's incredible, very fragile. A lot of these are very fragile. This one's super fragile. Essentially what it is like this three-dimensional plexiglass box or like rectangle stands upright. And it's got this wicked like air bubble, like this original, like, you know, this actual air bubble, which lays like somewhere, I guess, like, I don't know, like on the bottom display or something. Then there's this illustration of the foot, like the bones, like a skeleton or like the bones in your feet. Then when you place the shoe behind this illustration, which doesn't block the shoe, it allows you to really, you know, see the shoe, but it shows like what part of the shoe or the which bones in your feet or your foot like go in which part of the shoe. And to loop back and not to disappoint you or your listeners, I was going to say that the last hit I got at that store as far as displays.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
It was this like little, kind of small, but like just amazing. This like when I say Pete Sampras, I think the image, you could change like the photographs, I think, in the back of this particular display. It comes with like an actual real tennis ball. That's another thing that's interesting. A lot of these displays, they've like integrated like real, like a real football or like a real baseball. Like, you know, but anyways, this one had this tennis ball somehow integrated into it. That was definitely a few years ago when this store closed. But Pete, so the image, I think, if I'm not mistaken, was maybe Pete Sampras. I think it's like interchangeable. You can like, it originally may come with some like different photographs. But then speaking of the real baseball, if I'm not mistaken, I got this one joint on eBay. A lot of it I found on eBay later too, you know, from Japan. It was Ken Griffey. I could be wrong, but maybe like a Ken Griffey Hideo Nomo, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, like this baseball. Yeah. It's written spring training. I think it's like maybe from 1991. It might be written like 1991 spring. That's another insane one. So I definitely don't have them all, but I just have so many. And like, that's just, there's just so many things I could say.
You know, I don't know if you do it now. It sounds like you still do. Like, are you kind of like lurking around, talking to the manager? Hey, like, is that poster or that display going to be up here long? Like, those are the free opportunities, because Foot Locker can't sell you a display or a poster. It's not in their business, the way their business is set up. And a mom and pop, maybe, if they have boxes.
You'd be surprised. Right? You know?
Oh, yeah.
You'd be surprised. You got to keep pushing, you know?
Yeah.
There's always a way, you know, like, look, to be honest with you. I'm always looking. However, like, you know, I'm a good guy. I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes. I don't want anyone to get in trouble. You know, everything, you know, I operate, strictly, you know, legally. Yeah. But always pushing, always looking for a few different reasons. You know, for sure, I don't quite have the same, you know, like my lifestyle doesn't permit me to be digging as much as I used to, because like many things, it can become unhealthy too, you know, being online all night, in whatever capacity, you know, in this case, you know, let's say on eBay, you know, it's like you're, you know, or basically not taking care of the things you're supposed to be taking care of now, with my son, my work and everything else, like most people or like many people, you got to choose your battles, you know? So I'm always looking, for sure. It definitely interests me just as much. To get back to what you had touched on or asked about earlier, which I know we can get into, but I definitely didn't even get into or mention, is that I have, and I'm really proud of myself, I have integrated and allowed my business and the clients whom I work with, many of them have allowed me the opportunity to work in a professional, and if you don't mind me saying, world class, like none other, you know, manner in which we do use, whether we sell or rent or you know, implement the displays and the POP pieces directly or indirectly related to merchandising projects, working with some of our favorite brands as well, all kinds of different stores, retail outlets, whether they be corporate or independent, you know, we get a little bit of a slice of everything, which I'm very grateful for, and always invite the opportunity to keep going in those contexts, much of which I've created on my own, you know, my own lane. And I'm really confident, and I'm dead serious when I say that, you know, equally as excited and, like I said, proud of the work that I do creatively, which mainly to give your listeners and yourself an idea, is, you know, as a creative, I work with a specialization or a focus in lettering. So a lot of that comes from my interests when I was a lot younger in graffiti, later having studied graphic design in college, working as a designer, as well as having worked in and around many, many, you know, sneaker and clothing stores, as well as other in like stores in other industries here, also in New York, very briefly, with different brands, different creatives, collaborators, all under the umbrella, what I would describe as like visual communication, visual identity. So that indirectly or directly has a lot to do with, you know, branding, rebranding, you know, typography. What I do often is sign painting in a traditional kind of old school way. Rebranding, I mean, any business, this is like another one of my favorite subjects, is the business behind all of this creative, the business of creativity, essentially, you know, is that any business, even, you know, some of the biggest and the best that are like doing really well, are obviously constantly trying to not transform, but adapt and think of new ideas and keep it moving. You know, it's like one thing to get there, it's another thing to stay there, right? So any business is always looking for ways to essentially make more money, right? Yeah. And that's when I come through the door. And creatively, having worked in and around with all of these brands, creatives, stores, and so on, I believe that the value, not only do I, that I bring, you know, like in a technical or a literal sense, as far as painting by hand or having studied in design or this or that, really comes from a lifetime. You know, I'm 37 years old, so I'm still pretty young dude, the grand scheme of things, but, you know, a 25 plus year, you know, years of experience in the context of, you know, sneakers, clothing, identity, lettering, you know, streetwear, for lack of a better term, street fashion, street culture, you know, everything, you know, New York, having come up in hip hop, you know, with graffiti and all of that, you know, and like I said earlier, I'm not the only one, but I'm trying to survive, you know, for my son, really. And what I do, again, I'm very proud of. It's not always easy, but, you know, I'm a small guy. I'm a small business, and I'm trying to make it work. And what I find very interesting, if you don't mind me saying, is that I've figured out in this real, you know, in this real way, how to not only integrate all of this experience as a creative, but also with this, you know, these interests, and you know, the sneakers and the displays, the clothing, a lot of the things I'm passionate about, I've somehow finangled in a real great way, I believe, you know, to actually work in that capacity, in that exact context, and just try to keep going, you know.
And that's amazing. That's, I mean, a lot of people's dream to bring something what they love to their career. You know, you talked about going in a lot of directions and using a lot of different skills and having a lot of different experiences, but you also talked about some specific projects. I'd love to hear about, you know, one or more of them, maybe some recent ones if you want.
But let's start in 2015, like I mentioned, because in 2015 was after a few years of collecting and keeping all this display stuff under wraps. I had already studied in visual arts, in graphic design. I had already considered myself, you know, this kind of young creative or designer. The lifestyle as far as graffiti, which is very much related to all of that, and I'm very thankful for that, for sure played like an integral part of coming up as far as being interested in lettering and art, etc. Was the lifestyle had slowed down a lot, you know? So when I became interested and having found all of these displays originally, a few years later in 2015, I decided from a very genuine, not to front, but really from a real genuine place in me, having been and being a big sneaker collector, having so many friends, some of which are like some serious collectors, you know, way like I'm certainly not the biggest collector, you know. There's so many guys out there that I don't know, but many of which that I do know locally, people in New York, in the United States, in Paris, you know, in Europe that I know. A lot of these guys, these men and women who are interested in the sneaker thing, like for real, real, you know, like yourself and myself, Nick, bunch of other homies, like nobody was on this display thing. Like nobody even could describe, except for maybe a few exceptions. And you know what? Small disclaimer, I've said this many times and I do believe this, because like I said, I can't front. There's always going to be people out there who are like not on social media at all.
Yeah.
Who like have two basements full of all this stuff that we'll just like never know about. Like I'm not claiming to be the guy, like the biggest, you know, collector, or like I have the, you know, like more displays than anyone, or like nobody collects this. Like that is completely untrue. You know, on the other hand, just to kind of compare and contrast, much like Theos or many vintage stores all over the world, which is needless to say, kind of been around forever, but has transformed into this new kind of like resale kind of context, or for lack of a better way of describing it. Like you'll see a lot of these stores, let's be honest, like a lot of them, not to name names, but a lot of them kind of look the same, for not necessarily because of the product that they stock, maybe perhaps because of that too in some cases, but like, you know, a lot of these stores, they have these displays, you know, or yeah, some of them, or lots of them, or like a lot of collectors might like come across a bunch and be like, yeah, I'm gonna kind of decorate my man cave or my woman cave or my studio or my house or whatever, you know, with them. However, so that's kind of like a disclaimer, is that I would have to admit, certainly there are people out there, you know, like there are people, all kinds of people all around the world who are like absolutely obsessive about like anything you could imagine, including like all of this stuff, right? Yep. So that being said, although there may be many people out there that collect these displays the way I do, for me at that age, kind of 10-ish years ago, having thought, you know, I'm that guy, you know, I'm that sneaker guy, I'm this cool dude, I'm this tough guy, like, you know, I said to myself, I discovered now all of this display stuff that I knew nothing about. I mean, I really knew nothing about. I'd never seen or heard, or I'd never seen anything like it. And coming from this kind of perspective, like I mentioned, from like having studied design, you know, from a marketing kind of point of view, being a creative guy, looking at all of these details, much of which, you know, I very much also am a kind of a perfectionist in my work, and pay really close attention to detail in my work. I was looking at this stuff and I was like, man, this is so interesting. Like nobody really like cares about this stuff or even knows about it. Yeah. So to get to the point, in 2015, from a very real place in me, I said, you know what? I really want to share this with, like, you know, locally at the very least, with people I know here, but on a bigger scale, you know, I had discussed with some of the most well-known retailers, you know, in the world to work in this context, you know, Opium in Paris, Flight Club in New York. To be brutally honest, as far as logistics were concerned, it was very difficult, you know, to work or to bring the material, to ensure the material, to have a team to finance this, or to have X be financed, but this not be paid for, or a one-time design fee, or whatever the you know, we were trying to negotiate, unfortunately, on a world scale, outside of Canada, never happened. But the potential is always there. You know, it's not quite the phone call I'm like up at night waiting for, because we kind of just did it on our own. But in 2015, I said to myself, each and every single piece that I found, including this Michael Jordan poster that I'm looking at right now, deserves or merits, as far as I was concerned, to be shown in like a in the context of like a gallery. Each individual piece is artwork, is like a piece of artwork. There was an artist, a creative, a designer, an industrial designer, somebody who had manufactured and X amount of boardroom meetings that this creative team or person had to go through in order to actually get each individual display like made, you know?
Yeah.
And not only did I know that like nobody was really not, you know, nobody was really interested in it. And I even still believe that there's no like real market for that. That's like a kind of other interesting thing about all of this stuff. But there's no gauge, you know, like there's no real like gauge on like what all these different pieces are worth. It's like some of the real classic, like the director's chair, you see a lot more often, or some pieces, example, like were produced in bigger numbers maybe. So you see them a lot more often, like on eBay or whatever. But a lot of these pieces, like nobody has ever seen. Like I would be having like talked and worked with Nike directly with these pieces. Like I would be surprised if all of these displays even exist somewhere in like Nike's archive. I mean, it's very possible. I don't know, that's for sure. A lot of them are just like so obscure, you know? So I really do believe, having paid very, very, very close attention to all this sneaker stuff, including, you know, stores, brands, special projects, collaborators, you know, creatives, locally and or internationally, I knew nobody has ever curated an event or a space where the focus was on each you know individual piece. So what I did is, I actually kind of just thought of this now, but it's kind of ironic, because originally these pieces were manufactured to market the product, whereas the events that I curated and some of the work that I did with these pieces, I kind of did it inside out. You know, I was like, all right, obviously we're going to bring a few hundred pairs of sneakers and like some clothing to complement the displays. It was like the other way around. And we worked regularly with like Nick, big up, you know, all kinds of creatives, collaborators, Gary, so many to mention, photographer, you know, Tronner, Trontel Jordan. We just shot a video with Kevin Smith, my good old, super old homie, the better version of me, like my brother, Walla P, Mark, you know, we worked regularly. I don't want to leave anybody out, but with a number of other kind of creatives, collaborators, collectors. Mm-hmm. So I just thought of that, and it's very important to mention, because Nick, for example, Nick Pocket, you know, he brought in a bunch of shoes in 2015 for this massive. I mean, the reason why I say massive is not only was it a big kind of ambitious project for me,
right?
But the space, which again, you know, strangely enough, was literally across the street from that original mom and pop shop. It was actually called La Raqueterie, in French. La Raqueterie was like a, you know, this racket type of store, you know?
Yeah.
Later they had another name, I can't remember it now, but it was across the street. That literally the space we used was a massive, I mean, when I say ambitious, it was like, they were like, are you really going to fill up this whole place, or is having to be empty? And like, we filled it up, let me tell you, you know? So that was really the first crack at like, we got to show, I say the world, but I mean, it was locally, like But, you know, with social media, et cetera, not that I'm like, I don't even really know how like all of this, the social machine really works. Certainly, I don't know how to use it to its to like my advantage. But that was for sure, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm still even confident saying this today. I mean, certainly since I've never seen anything, nor before. But and if anybody knows any more about this, I would love for somebody to chime in and like, because any info regarding this type of stuff really interests me. And as far as any history, like, I don't know. And I really believe that like nobody has ever contextualized these pieces in the same way that we did. But then 2017 was a big medal. We were invited by a very, very well-known, very successful, good dude, a big, big, big time creative brand owner. I'm sure he does a bunch of other stuff too, from Toronto, to work with himself, his team, and Nike for Air Max Day. That was in 2017. They were launching which joint? Maybe you were there. It was a big, big event to launch the Vapor Max.
Yeah. Yeah. They had a couple of big events
around Air Max Day. What were they calling that?
Well, there was the Sneakeasy.
Sneakeasy. Sneakeasy, maybe like, yeah, it was like, yes, the Sneakeasy, right?
Big parties and like good build, big parties. Huge build outs. And
yeah, they were doing something with like a truck, maybe. Was it the same? I'm not really sure.
The bus or whatever it was, the that bus. You'd enter and you get a chance to win some grails.
I never got on that bus.
No, I mean,
but I'll tell you a joke that we make with these guys at Theos, you know. I won't go too deep into the details, unfortunately, but we make this joke with these guys at Theos. We talk about another bus, the Greyhound bus, the New York, that 87 bus, that 87 South. That's a whole other story, the bus and that New York shit, you know?
Montreal, I'm sure you guys did that trip a lot. I mean, it's...
But you guys are a bit closer, no?
Oh, I always thought... No, I think...
No?
I don't know my geography. I always thought it was much closer.
I'm not sure.
To Montreal, but I want to talk about the Theos event, and we'll circle back to some of this this other stuff. Tell me about what's going on there, and then I want to talk about sneakers for a bit again.
No doubt. So it's with Theos, as of very recently, but also as of recently over the course of almost a year now, we've been working together. So Theos is a vintage store. I don't know if that's exactly how they would describe it, but it's a, you know, vintage, pre-loved, pre-used, you know, with a bit of, anyways, I'll let them, maybe they'll get on here one day. So I'll let them describe exactly the nature of their business. But essentially this vintage store, you know, Theos, a group of guys and girls who work there, a few different owners, super good people, like them a lot, very grateful to work regularly with them. So we were working together. I did a little bit of visual stuff for them, as I've been going there regularly, but as of the last year, we started to work kind of like in a merchandising context. So marketing certain products, example, as of very recently, just last week or two, we launched this project for the Air Force One on a kind of like a basketball theme. This Air Force One installation that we just launched, it's a build out. So it's in the window, it's and in store. Sometimes, I mean, in the past, we did do like a full kind of store takeover. We did that for the North Face with creative and collaborator, very talented dude and good friend, Benny Wilding, a legend, a local legend as far as graffiti and illustrator, creative, fine artist. We worked on that joint together, which was, I think, actually my favorite one, you know? Heavy Gore-Tex, heavy North Face. I mean, that one was really heavy, actually. But this Air Force One basketball installation, and nobody, like, I mean, I could also be mistaken, so please excuse me, but I don't know if anybody's doing that, like, here. As far as like highlighting this type of thing, that's definitely one of the big ways that we set ourselves apart, you know? And I from time to time talk to people at Nike like about this type of thing. And to be honest, they only work with like official retailers, like Nike retail. that's something I'm not going to go into the details. I don't want to, you know.
I was going to ask you, you know, it's cool that, you know, a vintage shop or whatever you want to call it is doing something like that, not driven by the brand. They're doing it driven by themselves, and they think it's important.
Not only is it important from like a kind of creative standpoint, as far as doing something regularly that like nobody else is doing as far as competitors like around them, but the real idea is to drive business for them,
right?
Oh, it's to create and to promote and sell their products.
So where did it all start for you with sneakers and gear? You hinted a little bit about that, but I'd love to hear more about how it kind of hit you.
Truly, ever since I could really remember, even as far back as like a really young, like small child, I do have kind of these really like weird, almost like surreal or like vague, very far back memories of being interested in the sneakers and in the sneakers that my parents had bought me, like as a little kid, like even as far back as maybe like 5 or 6 or 7 years old. I don't know if it's in part because my parents had explained to me, you know, over the years that like they remembered me kind of like being excited about sneakers or what have you. So it might not even really be like an actual memory, but more so just like through the stories or like the eyes of my parents kind of like reminding me of that. However, for sure, when I was in elementary school, so as far back as like the age of like for sure like 8, 10 or 12 years old, I do have some really vivid like awesome memories of seeing sneakers, you know, other people's sneakers, including my own. One of which was one super like way back really awesome memory I have when I was probably about 10 years old. In elementary school in Montreal, I used to go to this school in NDG where I grew up, was with a good old friend of mine named Sean. And Sean just like always had like the wicked new sneakers, you know? So I just remember, like, I don't remember exactly the names of the models, but like, I remember a lot of like basketball shoes. So not only necessarily Jordans, but like some like cool, like flight sneakers. There was this one pair, I don't know if it was like a basketball or maybe even like a football kind of like style. It had the spell out like A-I-R, Air, like on the side, which reminds me also of another sneaker that I do remember having. It was called, I think, the Air, Nike Air Slant. But back to my good, super old buddy, Sean, I remember like, even at that age, between the two of us and among some other friends, like not quite selling sneakers to each other yet, but definitely like trading sneakers like throughout the day, like asking each other if we could like wear them for like a few hours here or there, or like during like this period in school, or like run them and like I'll bring them back tomorrow, or like I'll let you wear like two pairs tomorrow if I could like bring these home until the morning. So we had a lot of fun doing that. It was definitely this like really bizarre way of like getting into like trading, as well as like, even if I could even say like business, without knowing it was like a business in a sense. So we were like soliciting other kids to like trade sneakers with us, or like let us have them. But like, it was all fun and games, you know? Like there wasn't any like pressure or anything like that. Now, another very interesting and very important memory that I do have around that same age, we're talking like, you know, early 90s to like mid 90s. I was in elementary school. There was this kid, I think his name was Tyler. And he's still around here in Montreal. He's like a super good dude into skateboarding, street fashion. He might even own a couple of like restaurants. Does some other things. I don't know him very well. I never really was friends with him. He's a little bit older than he did. Anyways, all this to say that I specifically remember, And I brought him up over so much, like I brought him up so many times over the years when I talked to people about like these very early memories, was none other than the Nike Air Raid. So I specifically remember he and his older brother, I specifically remember that shoe and like really holding it in like high regards. I was like, wow, like these guys really like have these sneakers, you know. Another really old friend of mine that I still keep in touch with, whose his name is also Mike. Like I remember him, he had like some really wicked, some like good like pennies, these penny joints, definitely like a bunch of the Jordans. My first Jordans, and I feel like I gotta say it because it's true, but I feel like everyone has like this same story. It's like throughout like, you know, sneaker stories, sneaker media, this is like a recurring model. It's none other than the Jordan 6 Black Infrared. So I remember my parents buying me those shoes. My brother had a pair as well. And I love those shoes. I remember, you know, loving them so much. And this is like a funny thing because this could never happen these days. But like, I remember, let's just say like a year later in, let's say 1992, that shoe was, we'll just call it like a year old already. But I liked it so much that I bought it in like one or two sizes up, having grown again, like right off the shelves, like a year later, it was like still there, potentially like on sale. So my mom was even happier. She was like, oh yeah, sure. Like it's even cheaper, you know? So that was like a really, really good memory. Definitely. I remember, man, I have so many, like I remember, talk about fresh out the box. Like, wow. I remember this birthday party coming up. Actually it was for Sean's birthday party, my buddy Sean. So it's like, I definitely have to come correct, you know? I remember he was having this birthday party at this arcade, again, in NDG, in this kind of seedy pocket of our neighborhood, NDG, which later turned into this like infamous bar called PJ's Bar. You know, like the arcade was on the out. Then this place turned into this bar, which we later went to for so many years. And I remember my dad buying me this dope pair of Nikes. Can't remember exactly the model. It was definitely like a basketball shoe. And I remember putting them on in the passenger seat of my dad's car and literally taking like maybe one or two or three steps out of the car, like right into the party. And I was like, yeah, I'm that guy. Another one was I had studied playing the piano. Unfortunately, I haven't played for so many years, but from the ages of probably about like 5 to like 16, I was studying classical piano. And one summer, my, you know, like one of my first or few like recitals came up. So it was like this big thing, right? And you had to like dress appropriately. I remember it was like in this church. It was like this nice thing, you know, all the parents are there, whatever. And I had recently got like whatever pair of sneakers. Unfortunately, I can't remember what they were. And pleading with my parents to allow me to wear the sneakers with my like formal, like it wasn't quite a suit and tie, but it was like a nice pair of slacks with like a nice dress shirt. I was probably like not more than maybe like 10, 11 years old, you know? And my mom was like, no, like, you know, you can't wear these sneakers. It's like, you're doing, this is like a 20 minute thing. Just like brace yourself, just get through your sneakers on later. We'll go to the park. And I was like, I threw this fit. And the truth is, I don't even remember the outcome, but I remember it being very much like, the point is, I remember very much at an early age, like associating or attaching the sneakers to like my identity, you know, good old friend of mine, which I didn't mention, Rodney, good dude. I remember showing up at his house to hang out. 10 years old, there was maybe a dozen pairs, maybe 10, 12 pairs of these Dion Sanders, you know, with the Velcro, like the gold, like mesh, kind of like Velcro, red, black. I can picture them perfectly.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had a few siblings. They were all wearing these shoes. So it's like, I remember showing up and at the foot of the door, like the staircase, there was like 10 pairs. And I was like, wow, this doesn't look like this, like where I live, you know?
Yeah.
So that was like, you know, all these memories are, they're amazing, man. You know, I hold them so dearly, like, you know, and they're so vivid too, you know?
Totally. And you know what? One thing that you know, when you're talking about your work and what you're doing now, and you're telling these stories from back in the day, the one overarching thing I keep seeing is that, you know, this month, the community that you're a part of in Montreal and have been for all these years, correct me if I'm wrong, like, you know, we always say the Canadian community is small. Everyone knows each other. Even the Toronto community, big city. Montreal's a pretty big city too. But I get the feeling that the community in Montreal is kind of tight knit. Maybe now, you know, with the next generation, it's hard to keep track of everyone. There's, you know, there's super younger people compared to us, but it sounds like that community means a lot to you and is tight knit. Is it tight knit? I know it means a lot to you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think that you're absolutely right. As far as it being there is this element of it being like a generational thing too, being that for better or for worse, or maybe a bit of both, it has changed a lot. Like, everything really. So it's transformed, and there is, you know, like I'm sure I mentioned this earlier, that there is a bit of a disconnect between, I would say, myself, and I'll only kind of speak on my own behalf for sure, between like myself and the kind of average like collector, consumer, reseller, or however we can describe like this kind of younger average person who's into, you know, sneakers, etc. Definitely, I remember, you know, a few of my very close friends kind of always being into sneakers from a young age. And then like later on when we were, you know, like buying sneakers more frequently, or like kind of talking about them, or going to get them together, or like just kind of like looking into like the whole like market or like the scene together there. You know, that was fun in that we were able to relate and kind of create this like storyline between us, like close friends. And then of course, you know, like when you're a teenager and a young adult, you know, you start, you know, you change school, you might move around to a different neighborhood. You definitely start, you know, expanding your network, like you're going out to these places in the evening. So the point is like you're meeting new people. So it was definitely something that, you know, you discover is not like unique to like only yourself, obviously, because there's so many people out there. So we met like a lot of collectors, you know, good on Toronto, pun intended, in that good foot, you know, which if you don't mind me saying, is as far as I'm concerned, the only then and now, only like when I say real, it's like that's open for interpretation. But like, as far as I'm concerned, like the only like real sneaker boutique that was like really only a sneaker boutique, you know, with a couple of like in-house designs as far as like clothing, etc. That we've ever had here in Montreal, you know, as far as like what I would coin like that classic, like early 2000s, like sneaker boutique era, you know, like you'd see a little bit all over the world, but especially like in New York, like that style of like really this kind of like nice, different looking. Anyways, what I'm getting at is that through that store, big up Ace from Toronto, and of course, everyone else, as far as owners, management, people who work there, some of which I know, some of which I really don't know at all. Through that boutique, definitely, as far as my network, as small as it was, definitely was became a little bit more interesting in that. That was like a hub, you know, to meet people, to get those releases, to keep checking back regularly, you know, looking for whatever it was you're looking for, keeping up on what was dropping. So anyone who was like in and around that store for sure was kind of like on that level of like, it's a little different, you know, it was really like had a, how can I put it? Had a little bit more of like a trained kind of an eye, and was a little bit closer to like what was really going on kind of in the undercurrents of like the overall kind of commercial like sneaker thing, you know? But looping back really to your original kind of question, Montreal is a small city compared to some other big major cities. However, there are a lot of interesting things going on, including you know, everything that revolves and is related to fashion, sneakers and street fashion being very much, you know, directly attached to all of that. And there is a strong community. We have a lot of like a lot of players in that kind of milieu, and a lot of which are some really like serious collectors, among other things related to sneakers, as far as like design collectors, really like, you know, forward thinkers, people getting in and out of the industry, not just fans, but students of this kind of sneakers, really, you know. So a whole lot of like really good things going on here, for sure.
Yeah. And you mentioned fashion, of course, that's been a longstanding. I mean, the streetwear culture and sneakers been there, but fashion in Montreal has long been a big thing. And I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm sure we could talk about that for hours, but you mentioned a little bit about the younger generation, you know, us older guys often get there, but I want to take it even the next younger generation, because you have a son and he shows up occasionally in your content. Talk a little bit about how you like to get him involved, and how does he feel about the sort of creative process? Because it certainly seems like it's not really for you about, okay, wear these shoes, son. It's more about getting him involved, right? Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for asking me about that and my son. So my son, his name is Henry. He's only, he's already 3.5. I'm so proud of him. To put it simply, because I'm interested in sneakers, but not only literally the actual sneakers, but all of the kind of creative stuff that I do that's related directly or indirectly around sneakers, you know, I try to first and foremost, you know, teach him as much as I can about everything generally, but including sneakers as well, because he just sees like a bunch of sneakers around the house, you know. He keeps complimenting me on like these like different sneakers. He's like, wow, like never seen those before. he's actually made so many nice compliments about like my sneakers, and which is so cute, and it's so nice, and it's so genuine when he's telling me, you know. So you know, he sees sneakers around the house. Since he was born, of course, we got so many gifts, because like people are like, yeah, you know, Mike is like this sneaker guy. It's like, we gotta get his son these sneakers. So many really nice friends have like gifted Henry these sneakers since he's born. However, it's important to mention, and I really do truly mean this, is that I don't want to be the dad who's like turning his son into like the sneaker guy, because I very much believe that like I'm trying to teach him as much as I can as he gets older and older to kind of like make his own decisions, just to be himself. And like, he doesn't have to be exactly like his dad, right? I mean, he can have all kinds of other interests that I know nothing, that don't interest me, or that I don't know anything about. And that's totally, not only is fine, it's like I want that for him, you know. Of course, all of the things that we can like kind of relate to between the two of us is even better. It's a bonus. Like if he's interested in a bunch of different things, including sneakers, the way that I am is just a bonus, and is super, you know. You know, I show him a lot of the creative work that I'm doing. First and foremost, I want him to know that his dad is working hard, and that creatively, you know, he starts to have a little bit of an understanding of what his dad does, you know. And because he does very much like to draw and paint, he's a very creative little guy, because much like myself and his mother as well, you know, I try my best to kind of like plant those seeds creatively, give him as many options as possible in the creative kind of context, among others as well, and just try to see what interests him and what he takes to on his own, you know. So I very much like to kind of ask him or propose, or, you know, just kind of see what he thinks about getting involved if he wants to. Right. And And it's so great because, you know, he loves to spend time with me. Of course, he's proud to quote unquote work, even though he doesn't quite truly realize the impact and how proud really I am of him when we're doing this type of like quote unquote work together. So it's important for me, if possible, to allow him, you know, to kind of like point him in the right direction, but then take a few steps back and allow him to kind of come up with his own ideas and integrate his own, like, you know, I'll just call it like artwork, mm-hmm. On his own into the work that I do, which becomes the work that we do together. So, wow, what a blessing. Couldn't be more proud of him. And in a lot of the recent works and projects that I've been doing on a professional level, I've allowed, you know, him to integrate his own kind of sprinkle a little bit of his own artwork in there, which is, wow, nothing short of amazing, you know?
Yeah. And you know what? That's amazing that you're doing that. But even more, you know, impressive or important to me is your approach, that idea. We've talked a lot about it with different dads and even some moms about, you know, pushing and in direction. Even me, when I try to get my son involved, you know, on the podcast or creating content, you know, pushing never is going to do it. And the kind of guidance that you're talking about, you know, set him up and then kind of let him go in the direction, you know, not only when it comes to creating content, but I think that's important in all aspects of life. You know, we're so hands-on these days with our kids, you know, especially, you know, things have changed since we were kids. And I think, you know, letting him have that freedom that we had as a kid to kind of just, you know, go ahead and make a mess or go ahead, try it. You know, you don't have to have dad looking over your shoulder all the time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. Even though with the three-year-old, 3.5-year-old, it's hard to let them go. Even with my 10-year-old, sometimes it's, you know, it's kind of like, wait, I want you to do it this way. And it's like, you know what? It's way more fun for them to, you know, I need your help, dad. Okay, now I can do it myself. The one other thing you mentioned there, and I feel it the same, and I felt it over the years as my son. And it's an interesting idea of the validation, you know, post something on Instagram or walk down the street, someone will say fire pair, or someone will say, hey, I like your shoes. Always kind of warms a sneaker collector's heart. But there's something about when your kid says it, because my son says it to me sometimes, and he says it for the pairs you wouldn't expect it, or the outfits or the t-shirts or the hats that you wouldn't expect it. And I think, tell me what you think, but for me, it's the validation or the support or whatever you want to call it feels that much better. Number one, because he's my kid. Number one, you know, he's family. But he doesn't know what anything's worth. He doesn't even know necessarily the history behind it. He likes it in the purest sense. It looks good. It looks cool, right? And I imagine even for a 3.5-year-old, it's even more pure, right?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And one other thing, which, you know, I could be right or wrong. I'm really not sure, but I can't remember who told me this, but I think it had to do with maybe like a t-shirt or some sort of clothing, but it's the same thing with, you know, the sneakers, is that at that age, they're like, they're drawn so much to color, right? So all these wild sneakers with these like crazy colors, I feel like is very stimulating for a young child, you know? You know, but I definitely agree with what you're saying. There is this interesting kind of like purist perspective that has nothing to do with value, which is dope, you know, and it's just regardless of how important, you know, the whole sneaker thing is to any individual as far as a collector or not, you know, other or otherwise, is anything that you can, you know, have pleasure in as far as sharing with your child, whether it's sneakers or otherwise, is a beautiful thing, you know?
Yeah, me too. And it's cool that, you know, you're sharing it with him, you're getting him involved, and, you know, some of these things that are important to you, you're sharing, you know, not only with your clients, but the community in all these different ways. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing more and hopefully coming down to Montreal later this summer. Maybe we'll hang out for a bit. I have some sneaker and non-sneaker friends. I have a long list of people who've been on the podcast that some of them I haven't even met. So I look forward to doing that. And I really appreciate you sharing all your perspectives, your stories, and your time. It was really a lot of fun. And I know our listeners, whether they follow you or not, will really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I hope to really see you soon. That sounds all good. Thank you so much again for this opportunity. It has really been a great pleasure and very interesting, in fact, to jog the memory and to dive, you know, into this whole subject. It's really is dope, man. Thank you so much.
Big thanks to Michael DSK for coming on the podcast to share so many great stories and perspectives. You can find him at Sneakers High and Slang Here. You can find me at Heads Ain't Ready. Sneaker Dads is on YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as at sneakerdads.com. Next up is episode 100 and the finale of year 2 before we take a short break, the first since the podcast began. Thanks for listening. Later.